Hey creators, I want to tell you about the sponsor of today's show, and it is Riverside FM. Now, I love using Riverside for the Hey Creator podcast, but we use it at Hey Creator for many other things, including client interviews and community calls at times. It is the best tool that I have found for recording podcast episodes, either by myself, here with Tim, or with our guests. There are several reasons that we chose Riverside to be the tool of choice for the Hey Creator podcast, but let me give you a few of my favorites. The very first one is the ease of use and the quality of the audio. All I have to do is send a link to the guest and they can join. There's no additional software for them to download or anything special for them to do. It is so easy. The other big thing that I love about Riverside is how it records all of the audio and video locally and individually per guest. What that means is if someone drops a connection, it doesn't affect anyone else's feed. It also means that if someone has some background noise going on or something that could affect other people on other recording platforms, Riverside isolates all of those tracks, which makes it really easy to clean up in post-production. Another great feature that Riverside has come out with recently is their AI clip generator. This makes it so much faster and easier to get those short form vertical videos from the best moments of the Hey Creator podcast. I highly recommend using Riverside FM for your podcast. And to get a special rate, all you have to do is go to riverside.fm and use the coupon code HeyCreator, that's one word, HeyCreator, for 15% off any Riverside plan. Hey Creator, Matt here, and I'm excited to introduce you to one of my oldest friends on the internet. His name is Nat Eliason, and he is a writer, a podcaster, an internet creator. He is someone that I really look up to and have followed for a really long time. We actually used to work together at Sumo many moons ago, but I wanted to bring Nat on because he has written some of my favorite internet pieces, and one of them is called Be Yourself, Not a Niche, because we talk a lot on the show about why it's so important and niche down. But I think Nat offers a really unique alternative, especially when it comes to being comfortable playing the long game and being yourself as a creator. He says that the only thing that you can do to fail as a creator on the internet is to quit. And so we dive into what that means and how it can play out in your own creative business. The other way that we talk about this is being intentional about the choices that you make for content, courses, the type of products that you have for your business, because oftentimes you can find yourself going down a path that you didn't really intend to just because you got some early viral videos or you had some interest from a creator that was like bigger than you. And you're like, well, I have to keep doing what this person said I was really good at. Instead of being intentional, thinking about what do I want to do? What are the decisions that I want to make? What is the type of business that's going to work the best for me? Yeah, something that I've always admired about you, I think I've told you this, but if not, I'll tell you publicly. But one of the things that I've always really admired about you, and it related to this like story and sharing experiences, is that you've always been someone who is like willing to follow the thing that you're interested in, the thing that resonates and feels most true to you at the time. And still doing it in a way that can resonate with a wider audience. Because I can see the article that I'm thinking about that I've read several times is Be Yourself, Not a Niche. Mm. It's one of my all-time favorite internet articles. I don't know how long ago you wrote it.
I know.
But I keep coming back to it, especially when like I'm having some of those moments like, should I talk a little bit more about this thing that like I have more interest in and maybe there's some interest in, but like a lot of times in creator content, creator businesses specifically, we like tell people like, hey, you should be a niche. You got to plant your flag somewhere so people know how to like define you, how to like recommend you. And I think in a lot of ways, there is truth to that. But then I also think about Rob Hardy also talked about this. I think he wrote an article a couple of years ago called The Perils of Niching Down that I thought was really interesting. So I'd love to hear like how you think about like, or have honestly like the courage to say like, I'm going to be myself, not a niche, and I'm going to follow like these different pathways. Because I think it's really interesting and inspiring to like see how you've done that. And we've known each other for 8-9 years now. You're one of my oldest internet friends, which is another reason I wanted
2015,
to have you on.
So I think it's 9 years. Yeah. Well, thank you for saying that. You know, that means a lot. That's like one of my, I don't know, this sounds weird, but like favorite types of compliments, I guess. Right. Like
the one where people tell you did an awesome thing.
Well, an article that I wrote resonated in a useful way. Right.
Like, yeah. Absolutely.
Cause I'm sure you know this too. Sometimes you just fire stuff off and have no idea if it's going to matter to anyone.
When you wrote that, cause you just kind of mentioned like sometimes you just fire stuff off. And I think that's kind of one of the pros and cons of the internet is like you can put so much time into something and it doesn't hit the way that you want. And then you just like fire something off in an hour and it goes viral.
Yeah.
Did you feel like when you were writing Be Yourself, Not a Niche, that it was going to be something that people would refer back to, or am I more of an outlier in that being one of the faves?
I have no idea, honestly, because I wrote it 3 years ago at this point. So I don't remember what my headspace was at the time, but my assumption was probably like I've broadly found that articles tend to fall into one of two categories where they either have this mass appeal that's kind of short lived, where it can go viral and draw a ton of people into your sphere and resonate with people, but then ultimately be like somewhat forgettable. And so I've certainly had those posts. And there are other posts that do much less well in the short term, but strike some kind of nerve where people do come back to them and, you know, review them in the future. And this is definitely an article, and I think a lot of people will resonate with this. At more than half of the things that I'm writing are just reminders to myself. And this is something that I've perpetually struggled with, which is the extent to which you're obligated to narrow your focus so that, like you said, you can be recommendable versus stay broad enough to remain interested in the topic, or to remain interested in what you're doing, right? Because like the number one way you fail at this game of being an internet person, whatever, is by getting bored and quitting, right? Like that's the main way that you fail, more than picking the wrong niche or choosing the wrong platform or whatever, right? Like if you stop, then you fail. So in some ways you have to do whatever is going to let you keep going. And, you know, I had at that point and still largely to this point, not found any one niche that was interesting enough to stay in forever. Right. I spent a lot of time in SEO. I spent a decent amount of time in like men's sexual health. I spent a decent amount of time in crypto. And now a lot of my articles are like, if anything, like philosophical essays. And it's just sort of always been what I feel like writing. And I the first couple of times it was scary in the sense of, you know, oh, if I stop talking about this thing, will anybody still be interested? And you certainly do lose some of your audience, but I think the people who stay on, you actually develop a deeper relationship with. As a counterexample to that, think about all of the like Twitter thread boys who were building 150,000 follower audiences over 6 months by just juicing the Twitter algorithm with these threads.
Yeah, because you kind of wrote this in at the height of the Twitter guy craze. Like mid 2021.
Yeah, I was starting to get there. Yeah, yeah. Like if that's what you're doing, then you're completely replaceable. Like you're a totally forgettable creator, because as soon as you get slightly off your game, the next thread person who can regurgitate Wikipedia articles will replace you. And because you are like the more niched down you are, the more kind of like boring and replaceable you are too. So I think there's this trade-off between speed of audience building and longevity. And like I'm fortunate that I've been doing this for 10 years now, and I don't have the biggest email list by far. You know, I have 45,000 people or something, but those people will be interested in these like pretty personal, thoughtful reflection type essays. They're not expecting a 1,000-word article on, you know, how to make money online or something. And in that sense, I'm sort of like irreplaceable because nobody else can write those kinds of pieces. And so the audience is like extremely focused in that sense. So yeah, I guess it is, part of it comes down to goals too. Like if you want to make a lot of money really quickly, then definitely don't be yourself. Unless yourself is like a really hot person who can, you know, do it all.
That's like when I've given people some of this advice in the past, and I was like, is your goal to build a business as quickly as possible or to establish something that people can give you money for? Well, they have to be able to like put a label on you and say like, well, Matt will help me with this. And I've done that for newsletters. I've done that for, I'm still doing it for newsletters in a lot of ways. And they have to be able to do that so they can quickly identify and people can quickly refer you. And that is the way to make more money quickly. But the thing that you brought up both here and in the post is like this thought of like, are we here for the long run or are we here for immediate content or immediate like money making? And obviously there's nothing wrong with some immediate money making. But if we're thinking about this from the big picture perspective and you saying like, hey, the only way you really fail in this is to stop and just like quit. If that's the case, then I really like the way that you said it. What you lose in speed, you gain in durability, and that the audience over time becomes a group that you can do these things together. I have a visual that I think of that's kind of like an hourglass, that early on you'll be talking about a lot of the things that like just seeing what hits, and eventually for most people you do fall into, and maybe you go through it a couple of times, but you get into that narrow middle that becomes the niche that you're going to like establish the business or the brand on. But if it's more of a personal brand or something that you want to like be more durable on, and that is ultimately just being yourself, those people who liked you because they like say they found me for productivity stuff or bullet journaling, or like for you, like the book notes that you did a while ago, or men's sexual health or crypto. If you stick with it and you're talking about things that interest you, the hourglass starts to widen again. You're like, I can talk about whatever I want. I bet everyone can think of a creator that at this point, they are just interested in whatever they have to do. You can also think about it from a perspective, maybe like a more mainstream perspective of, think of a musician that you really like. One of my favorite bands of the last 10 years probably is Mumford & Sons. And I've been listening to them for 10 plus years, I guess, at this point. And at this point, I just want them to keep making music. Like, would I prefer that they were making like 2010 era folk Americana, like kind of rock? Yes, that's my favorite type of Mumford & Sons music. But if they want to make more of a rock heavy album, great. If they want to make more of a poppy album, great. I just want them to keep making music. Like, they're at the bottom of the hourglass where it's just like, hey, I just want you guys to keep doing something. Just don't quit. Make whatever music you want. I just want to keep hearing from you for the rest of my life.
Well, and sometimes by broadening out of the narrow niche you start in, you discover what your true niche is. Mm-hmm. In the sense of, you know, in the beginning, I thought it was SEO. And then I started getting into all these other topics. And I eventually realized that really part of what I'm good at is taking these arcane, kind of opaque, often technical fields and providing the explanations both of like how to engage with them and what makes them exciting, that can help get like quote unquote normies more excited about them or get through like the first step of the journey of figuring out like what's going on there.
Can I ask a quick question?
Yeah.
Were you able to, so this is interesting, because of what you were doing with, it was Growth Machine, right?
Yeah.
Was that the name of your guy? Mm-hmm. So with what you were doing on SEO and you were identifying some of the things, was it because you were like diving into these topics and were you seeing like other keyword searches or things that are like, hey, like people seeking to try to understand a thing that you knew you could explain?
Mm.
Is that kind of like how, or was it just through your kind of natural research and things that you were doing?
I did that for a little bit early on with my blog, but I eventually hit the point where I realized that SEO is great for selling things, but it's not great for building an audience. Because usually people who are searching for a question on Google are not looking for a person to follow. They're just looking for a resolution to their problem. And so it's a great skill in that sense, but I never found it great for building an audience per se.
When I think about the times in my life when I've felt the most inspired, productive, and motivated, there are all times in my life when I've been around a group of people on the same path as me. These communities gave me the support, encouragement, and motivation that I needed to stay on the path and be accountable for the goals that I set, especially when I hit a rough patch, like if a launch didn't go very well, or if there was a piece of content that I worked really hard on and it just didn't really pan out the way that I wanted it to. This is why we started the Hey Creator Community, a place for you to connect with like-minded creators, follow a proven roadmap for success, and get the support you need to build your creator business. And look, the people are the most important part of any community, but it's more than just the people. It's more than just the connection that you make, even though that is critical. You also get step-by-step training and direction from our team of creative experts. Plans start at just $39 per month with no long-term commitments. Go to heycreator.com/community to learn more and sign up for your first month. Another thing that I think is really like this all kind of coalesces and integrates together around creators is like another one of your articles that I really liked was when the money's too damn good. Mm-hmm. And I actually want to think about or talk about like several steps before that. And it kind of is related to the niche question as well, is when you're at the point and of even just building the audience and say like you are establishing a niche and you have momentum around a topic and you're building a business, you have some products. If there's a thing that like, say you're trying out three or four different topics just to see what's going to work. And then one really starts to go, making intentional decisions and establishing processes around deciding, is this really what I want to dedicate 3, 5, 10 years to? Like I kind of had that with the bullet journal stuff where I was like, oh, well, my YouTube channel is growing because of bullet journaling. Like you could have made the same decision around like, well, I'm just going to be Rome research guy, or I'm going to be, men's sexual health guy. Being really clear about what you want to get out of a topic, because even before the money's too damn good, like the audience is just too damn big.
Yeah.
That for you to say no to it. I have a couple other examples, but like even coming back from the moment where you realize, well, I don't really want to do this anymore, but I have to keep doing it because the money's just too damn good. Like what is that whole process like of even like pulling back to the early stages and trying to like recognize that in the moment?
It's a good question. I'm not sure if it's possible, right? Or this is something I've started to believe more strongly, is that a lot of these stories and lessons are only helpful after you've gone through some sort of fall like that yourself. You kind of can't fully digest the lesson until you've had the experience that lines up with it. But I do think that people in the beginning, you kind of just need to try to get something to work, right? To build the confidence that you are capable enough to make things happen. But then once you have, you might hit this point where you can say like, okay, I've built some of these skills. Now I can take them and try to apply them in this other area that I do care more about, but maybe didn't want to start in, or I can keep going on this and optimize for money instead of fulfillment for a certain period of time. And that's not necessarily a bad thing to do.
No, yeah.
Sometimes you need to, that. Right?
Right.
Like,
hey, I can turn this thing on and go make some money. This is great.
Yeah. And if you've got, you know, debt, or you've kids, or, you know, if you need to make money, like go make money. Right. It's where it becomes a problem, I think, is people go past that point and never wonder if they have or haven't. And it's hard to put in the roadblocks to like wake yourself up when you've gotten into like that space, right? It's like, if you're making minimum wage and you're working three jobs and you never see your kids, like they'll respect you for it, right? Because they know that you're working as hard as possible to keep food on the table and, you know, keep the rent paid and whatnot. But if you're making millions of dollars a year and not seeing your kids, like they know that you're choosing not to see them, right? Like they, on some level, yeah, they will recognize that, because it's, you're not starving, right? If you scale back on work, then what? You don't get to fly first class as much or something. There's a line there where it goes from I need to do this to I think I want to do this. And you have to figure out how to find that line for yourself. And I'm not sure there is a strict way to do it, but you don't want to end up in the situation where you've put another 5 or 10 years into this path. And then you look back and say like, well, I should have quit to go do this other thing way sooner.
I'm glad you brought up examples where, and it's really interesting to think about like the person who's working two jobs to provide and they don't get to see their kids very much, but the kids respect them. Whereas kid also is not seeing you very much, but you're making millions of dollars and they know there's not as much respect there because they know, maybe they can't describe it in those words. And it makes me think about, especially in this space that we're in for creators, where you are developing those skills, you have ways to apply them in different businesses, or maybe just at a different pace. Like you could do it in a different way that when you can look back and be like, oh, I could have been doing something differently, or I could have been doing the same thing differently if I had just made other choices. And the other thing that you brought up is like, it is hard to do early on the first time or the first couple of times, just like, hey, I have to prove to myself that I can do this. And so like, if you're listening to this and you're in a stage where like, I'm just proving to myself, like for me, I was just proving to myself, like I can get 10,000 YouTube subscribers and then I can get 100,000 or I can get, you know, 10,000 email subscribers. Like I can do those things. I can do them for myself. I can do them for clients. But then like the other like thing that it made me think about in terms of like putting those guardrails up is in the past when I was pretty early on, if I had something that hit pretty well, especially like 2 or 3 times, I'd be like, oh, well, this is probably the next thing that I should do because like I'm getting momentum. Like people want to hire me. They're asking me if I have a course. Is there like an ebook? What can, you know, is there a newsletter they can sponsor? I'd be like, there will be by the end of this week. I can tell you that much. And like one example now that I'm like playing so much more slowly is like if I post something about being a dad on Twitter, like my most popular posts have been about fatherhood. And you know, like 5 years ago, even maybe more like 3 years ago, if I had seen like the majority of the energy or momentum that I was getting, the audience that I was building around a separate topic, well, I'd probably go like really hard on that thing and even think about like, well, I'll just change everything about what I'm doing to like follow that attention. And now I'm like, hey, that's great. That's cool. I like have like a little side newsletter because I have those skills. And I'm like, okay, I know that I should try and capture as much of this as possible, but I'm not going into it for really the first time ever. I'm seeing something that I have momentum on, but I'm actively like intentionally choosing not to make it even like a side thing really, but making it something where it's like, hey, if I can like gather some dads around, that'll be cool. And maybe this is something in 3 to 5 years that becomes more of a focus. But until then, like I'm not like killing myself or making drastic like wholesale changes to the business or to my life based on a few tweets that did really well. And I've done that before.
That's growth, man. I know what you mean. I like, you know, I've got a couple of things like that too, where there's this occasional pull of, oh, I should try to make a content business out of this, or I should try to make a brand out of this, whatnot. But the thing that I have realized is for me, writing is the thing. Mm-hmm. You know, it's the only thing that I want to make money from. I don't really want to focus on anything else as a source of income, which is hard and scary because I do have these other things that I could, you know, like leaving crypto was the hardest one, right? Because I knew that I could stay in crypto. I could, you know, join a fund or join some teams or whatnot. And the potential money would be insane, but it was just not, it didn't make me feel good, right? And over 30 years, that wasn't the thing that I wanted to get good at. It's like the thing that I wanted to get good at was writing. And so I had to pretty deliberately quit just to focus on the writing. And now whenever I have those little inklings, right? Oh, I should do this, or oh, I should talk about this thing or whatnot. It to me, I see it now not as opportunities, but as distractions, right? It's like, oh, those are the ways that high performing people procrastinate, because you're in like a small plateau of the main thing. You're not getting that dopamine rush of quick wins or whatever. So you seek it out by starting something new. But then, you know, you don't want to hit the end of a year and have 12 projects at 10% when you could have had
right.
one that's at 100%.
Something I've been thinking about a lot that I wanted to ask you about, I didn't really prep you on, but how do you think about, now that we've been in this creator game for a while, and like, we know how to do a lot of the things when it comes to audience monetization, you know, revenue, business building. One of the things that I've been thinking about a lot is making the jump from just showing that you can do the work, from being consistent, from making good things, to making something that is like really great, to increasing your quality level, say from like that, hey, this is 80% of what I want it to be, I guess, or this is 100% of what I'm capable of right now, but I know I could go further. Like, I know that I could make YouTube videos better than I'm making them right now. I know that, like, one of the things Tim, producer, co-host, and I talk about a lot is like, what are a couple of things of that we can do with the podcast to make it like 10% better than most of the like hit record interview podcasts that are out there. And so I'm thinking about like, once you've established yourself as like, as a reliable kind of like expert level person, feeling more freed by that like level of accomplishment to try and go up a level, rather than feel like complacent and be like, ah, you know, whatever, I'll throw some stuff out and people are going to like it because I'm a person in this field. What do you think about going like to that next level? Cause I found it really hard in YouTube to make that happen.
I feel like the first question is, do you care enough about the thing to make those leaps? And this is a really helpful question for me. And this is why I stopped doing much YouTube or short form videos or podcasts or any of that stuff. I've, you know, made forays into it multiple times, and I kind of blew up on Instagram and TikTok over the last year doing short form videos, which was fun. But I started to ask myself, okay, you know, how do I make this better? How do I take this to the next level? And I realized I didn't care. It didn't really matter to me. It was a means to an end. And I think that once upon a time, you could play these content games as a means to an end and you could still do well. And I think those days are past. Like, I think that the competition is so fierce and people are so invested in getting that YouTube ad revenue, like building that big Spotify podcast, whatever, that if you don't deeply care about making your craft better and better and better, you just won't win long term. Like, consistency isn't really enough. And so I do think that's like a big question everybody has to ask with these things is like, you know, if you want to do better at them, you do really have to say like, okay, well, do I actually want to become insanely great at this? Or do I just want to make a lot of money? Or do I just want to be famous or like these other things? And for me, I mean, I get legitimate joy out of working on getting better at writing. And, you know, I read tons of writing books. I like study books to try to figure out what's different between their writing and my writing so I can incorporate that back into mine. Like, when I read, I'm 50% reading for how the book has been written as for what's in it, right? It's like, I just can't turn that part of my brain off. It's just endlessly fascinating to me. And so that's kind of like the ultimate sign that this is the thing that I should be doing, because I don't feel that way about anything else, really. And I think people just have to be honest with themselves, right? It's like, trying to get into any of these games, right? Like YouTube or building a podcast or being a writer or any of it, like, you've got to really like it, because it's an awful right. way to make money. It's an awful like type of business to start. Like, it's yeah. hard, and your odds of success are extremely low.
Yeah. For all that we talk about and all that gets promoted for, like, you know, easy internet money, here I am with the air quotes yeah. is like, I mentioned my college buddies. We were just like out, you know, we went on a golf trip earlier this month, and like, I'm very much like just very mid when it comes to like all of them, when it comes to like overall financial success, if we want to like make that comparison, because like We got guys who are just like incredible salesmen at tech companies. They are like running big teams. They are like developing and building real estate. They're in all kinds of different businesses, and they are also busy, sure, but they're not wondering like, hey, what am I going to throw to the Twitter feed tomorrow? Like they're not bringing their computer on the flight over so they can schedule the newsletter for Saturday.
Yeah. I mean, if you join a company in almost any role and you work really hard in that role, in 10 years, you'll almost certainly be making a good amount more money than when you started, just through promotions and job switches and whatnot. If you start writing or start a podcast or start a YouTube, you might still be making nothing in 10 years. There's
good news, everybody.
there's no like ladder that you get to climb necessarily, right? It's very bimodal, and most people aren't going to make it. So you've really got to enjoy it. It's really got to be rewarding, because if it's not rewarding, you'll never put in the work that it will require to become great at it.
Hey, creator, I have a secret weapon that I want to tell you about, but first I want to tell you how I use it. You know those awesome Hey Creator newsletters that go out once or twice per week that sign off from me, Matt Ragland? Well, I'm not writing those, not directly anyway, because every newsletter is researched, written, edited, and uploaded to ConvertKit by our automatic evergreen team at Hey Creator. And the reason those newsletters sound like they're coming from me is because they're coming directly from the Hey Creator show, along with special presentations that I've made in the community, keynote speeches, or other podcasts that I've been a guest on. Automatic Evergreen lets me send high converting, quality newsletters on time every week with a fraction of the time and attention that I used to give to a newsletter. And this is so valuable because it gives me more time to focus on the podcast and on the community. If you're curious about how Automatic Evergreen can put your newsletter on autopilot and make you money, then click the link in the show notes to book a call. It's also important to like remind people or tell people like, hey, if you're pretty early on this, like take as much time as you need to figure it out. Like I didn't quit my job at Podia until like I just couldn't stand not doing anything else. And I really enjoyed being there, and I enjoyed being at ConvertKit. It really came down to almost like an attention and time allocation question of like, okay, I'm putting enough time into my own business, and I'm seeing some success there. And that was clear. I had made enough money to like set aside a runway for myself. And it was like, okay, it's coming to a point where I either have to spend less time at work, which isn't really an option when they're paying you a salary to be there. less time on the side hustle, which is what it was at the time. Less time with my family, which I was already, working some time over each weekend. So I was already like lowering that amount of time with them, or like spend less time on myself, like with workouts, like don't work out anymore, just work instead. And that was never really an option for me either. So that is what it came down to. But I worked very intentionally on like those projects in that business for about two, almost 3 years before I quit. And even then, it was just a question of, it was a realization, is like, I need to turn down the dial on one of these things. And I don't want it to be anything else except the work, the job that I was at the time. And that was the final decision for me.
Yeah. And I think the really important piece in there is that it was 2 to 3 years of working on it before you were able to make that decision. There's definitely this illusion of things happening quickly, because you hear the one case study, or you see the Twitter thread about somebody blowing up overnight. And
I woke up with $50,000 in my PayPal.
Exactly.
And then that's how I knew. I was like, oh, really? That's how you knew? For you. Making the hard choices.
It almost never happens that way. And when it does, it's usually a little bit of a bait and switch, right? Like, I posted an article about how I grew my TikTok from 0 to 55,000 followers in 6 weeks. And, somebody might see that and go, oh my God, like I can go do that too. And, not to sound too like full of myself or whatever, but like you probably can't, right? It's like I've been doing the growth hacky whatever stuff for 10 years
right.
on all these platforms. Like I haven't
the work before the work.
Exactly. Exactly. Like you know, if you're coming into it blind, just following one person's case study, it's almost certainly not going to work for you. And that's sort of why I don't talk about that stuff much anymore. Why I don't talk about the, like, here's how I grew X or how I did X, Y, Z, because it's always, there's always some other very important ephemeral elements that don't fit into listicles. And, you know, it's like, there's this like intuitive sixth sense you develop when you spend long enough in an industry that's really essential to perform well in it. And you just can't learn that by reading articles about it. You've got to just do it for a long time.
Yeah. It's like, so one of the books that it makes me think of, I heard about from you and Tiago, is How to Take Smart Notes. And one of the parts of that book that's always stood out to me, and I bring it up several times, even though it's not like about note-taking, which is about what the book is about, is he talks about the development of expertise through experience. And that where he talks about like uses the visual of the bike and says, like riding a bicycle, one can only learn how to do it by doing it. You can't just say like, all right, I've read enough stuff and now I'm an expert. You have to like go out and do the thing and practice it. And it is that like 10 years of work before you spend 10 weeks on TikTok and blow up that allows you to build the level of expertise to make that happen. Or even it still may not happen, but just like the capability for it to happen totally. A little bit more reliably.
Yeah. And that's a big trap people fall into in general, is just doing too much research and too much reading. You kind of just got to go try the thing for a while. And the reading is helpful as you go, not before you start.
Yeah. I know Ali Abdaal talks about this a lot of like make 100 shitty videos, mm-hmm. like just go ahead and get that out of the way. I call it the hundred rep rule. And I've brought this up on the show before, but I always think about how MKBHD, when he posted his 100th video on YouTube, you know, he's sitting at like his parents' kitchen table, like talking about some new Microsoft software release. And he's like, hey guys, 100th video. This is a really cool milestone for me. Let me see how many subscribers I have. 76. That's so cool. And now he has, I think, 18 million has done like 2000 videos. And, you know, obviously I think he's a good example of someone who has like made that leap from I'm going to be consistent to I'm going to be insanely great at the quality and the things that I do.
Most people don't have that patience to do something in the dark for years and hope that it turns into something eventually. I actually feel as though you and I and, you know, MKBHD and some of these other people who have been in this world, I mean, obviously we're on a completely different level from him, but those of us who grew up with the earlier versions of these networks are kind of blessed with a little bit more patience for these things. Because when I got started in the internet marketing world, it was really just like SEO and maybe Facebook pages. And you knew it was going to be a year or two before your site was fully indexed and showing up in search results. And there was a 0% chance of you taking off immediately. Maybe if you got a viral Reddit post, but that was super unlikely. Like it just didn't happen, right? So if you wanted to start building an audience, you were looking at minimum 2 to 3 years to start to get traction. And that's just not the case anymore. You know, you could blow up in a week if you hit the algos right. And that possibility, I think, really screws with people's heads. Because as long as it's possible, there's a question of, well, why hasn't it happened yet?
Yeah, why hasn't it happened? It also, like, what if in those early, going back to something else we talked about, what about in those early days, if you do hit the algo within your first month and you've just like thrown out this video that you're like, yeah, I'm just going to try this thing. And that's what goes. And people are calling you and people are like asking for more. It's like, well, I guess the next 2 to 3 years of my life are talking about this thing that I just like thought of in the shower, whether or not that is what I actually want to do. This is what I'm supposed to do, right?
Audience capture is a real problem. It's so easy to get seduced by it, where you just, what your audience resonates most with, you start leaning more and more towards. I think, you know, Michael Easter talked about this in Scarcity Brain, about how they did some big study of politicians on Twitter. And they found that once they started posting some negative tweets, those negative tweets got more engagement, and then their percentage of negative tweets increased over time. And so there was kind of this reward loop for being negative on Twitter that was making people more and more negative. And you know, you see versions of that happen all over social media.
One more question that is the one that, like, how do you balance ambition, productivity, parenting? Like,
yeah, it's a good question. I think it's something that I always get to think about a lot. I mean, when my first daughter was born, it was in the middle of the crypto mania as well as the real estate mania. So my wife Cosette's a realtor. And
in Austin, no less.
In Austin, yeah. And everybody was moving here, and she was doing luxury real estate. And so all these people who were just flush with tech cash were coming in and buying houses, and she was working constantly. I was working constantly on all the crypto stuff. And, you know, we were not nearly as present as I think we would have really, really liked to be. And we didn't realize it until a few months later. And it really kind of like ate us up afterwards. And it, you know, it prompted a lot of reflection. And we were fortunate that both of our jobs basically like stopped last year. because, you know, I had stopped doing crypto stuff. The real estate market was really, really slow. And it gave us an opportunity to kind of like step back and think about these things. And for me, a big part of deciding to go all in on the author work was deciding that I wasn't going to put a significant amount of time towards anything else. And so for me, that means, you know, just getting my words done for the day, getting my editing done for the day, or getting, you know, for these next couple of months, getting my promo done for the day, which is usually a very low bar. It's something that I can hit in 3 or 4 hours. And then, you know, and so I sort of feel like if I can get those 3 or 4 hours done, then I've really like won the day. Mm-hmm. And I know that if I work a huge number of hours, I can make something really significant happen in the short term, but I'll get burned out and eventually quit and it won't last. But if I can do even really 2 to 3 hours of good book work 5 days a week for 30 years, then I'm going to have a pretty substantial library of work out there. That framing has helped me a lot with thinking about productivity, is that this isn't a 1 or 2 year game. This is a 30 year game. And if I just focus on this one thing for 30 years, it's going to get to a really interesting place. Now, you know, I think the caveat here that's important is that I'm fortunate enough from the work I did before and the work I did in crypto that I have 5 years or so for the author work to hit escape velocity and to, you know, replace my prior income. And that's kind of like my safe buffer. If I had no savings and all of these costs, I'd be in a very different headspace. But it kind of goes back to that, you know, that topic of like, well, if you have the capacity to work less and spend more time with your kids at the, you know, and be less rich long-term as a result, I've never heard of anybody regretting that, but I've definitely heard people regret the opposite.
Thank you for listening to the Hey Creator podcast. This show was produced by Tim Forkin and would not be possible without the support of our incredible team at Hey Creator and the Hey Creator community. Make sure you connect with us on all of the socials at Hey Creator Hey. And for more information on our company, go to heycreator.com and also sign up for the newsletter while you're there. See you next time.